Well, hi there, fellow inhabitants, and welcome to the Planet LP Podcast. This is the place where we drop the needle on a world of albums. I'm Ted Asfragadu, and oh, look, it's John Young. Hey there, John.
Hey, Ted. I think I just saw William Shatner and Jeff Bezos fly by. How you guys doing?
Really? I'm doing fine. How are you, gentlemen?
Thank you, Bill. Hey, by the way, it is just great to talk with you again, Ted. I know with our varying vacations kind of flying all over the place, you in Maui and me in Oklahoma City, it's been nice to catch up again, my friend.
It is. For those who expected the weekly podcast to be a weekly thing, we kind of took a little bit of a break, but we are back, folks. We are. John and I, just to remind you, we both work in the radio biz. He works for Alpha Media and hosts the 95.3 KUIC morning show in Vacaville, California. I'm with iHeartMedia in San Francisco, where I work as a reporter doing traffic and news. But both of us are huge music fans and love talking about music so much that we started this podcast to connect with fellow fans like you. So if you're social, we'd like to be social with you as well. We're on Twitter, at ThePlanetLP. Instagram, I changed the name to at ThePlanetLP as well. Facebook is just PlanetLP. You can email us, Ted at PlanetLP or John at PlanetLP.com. Subscribe or follow our podcast on the usual platforms like Apple, Google, Amazon, Spotify, or Odyssey.
And by the way, thanks to everybody who's been liking all of the social media stuff, interacting with us, sending us your ideas and your various suggestions for artists that we should spotlight. It has been fun to meet new folks, like hundreds of you at one time. That's pretty cool.
It is. We've had a couple of social media only videos that we've posted on our Facebook page, Instagram, and oftentimes I've linked it to Twitter as well. For those of you who have liked and enjoyed our videos that we've recorded via Zoom, we might be doing more of those. And again, a lot of it comes from you, fellow music fans. You have suggestions that we ought to listen to certain artists that we're just not aware of because there's so much music out there. Please send them our way. We are more than happy to take a listen to it. We may feature it. We may not. It's possible. But, you know, one of your suggestions may end up as one of our videos that we occasionally do from time to time.
And people seem to like them, which is why I'm going to keep my hair groomed, my eyebrows trimmed, and be at the ready for another possible, you know, video inclusion on the socials.
Yes, and I will make sure to shave before I get on the camera as well. So in this episode, speaking of which, we are kind of going back to the future by visiting the year 2001. And what a year. John, did you know that in January 2001, iTunes made its debut?
I also believe 2001 was the invention of the iPod, which my kids were huge fans of when it came out. Your ability to store music and walk around with your little, your tiny headphones on, rocking and grooving to stuff with that little iPod in your pocket.
You remember the iTunes store? I mean, they still have it, but if my memory's still sharp, and I think it kind of is, I bought a record the first chance I got when I downloaded iTunes. And the album was U2's Under a Blood Red Sky. I had it on vinyl, but I thought I might as well get a digital copy. Do you remember your first iTunes purchase?
I think it was a single song. And you know what? I think it's gonna make you chuckle. I think The first iTunes single I bought and loaded in was Donny Iris's Aaliyah. You remember that?
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Because I just dug that guitar part. I thought the song was great. I thought this guy's only had two hits. Maybe he needs my 10 cents.
Your 99 cents, you mean?
Yeah, or whatever it was, 99 cents. I believe that was the first thing I ever bought digitally. And I remember playing it, you know, hooked up with the iPod and walking around going, Aaliyah.
Yes. Here we go again.
Great tune, baby. Come
it
on.
It is, man. A great tune. Whatever happened to Donny Iris?
Well, again, that may be a future podcast.
It could very well be. We're going down a rabbit hole we might not want to go down right yet.
This good may point.
Be, like you
good
said, point. For the future. For good the future. Point. Well, speaking of which, we bought other records from that year, and we're going to share our top fives from 2001. At the beginning of 2001, many were still smarting from the presidential election here in the United States that after a brutal recount in Florida where lawsuits were flying back and forth, the Supreme Court stopped the counting of the ballots, which meant that George W. Bush was headed to the White House. Now, by September 11th, 2001, the world and the culture changed in profound ways. Maybe some of these albums reflect that change. Maybe they don't. Perhaps at some point we'll be able to stitch together a theme of our top five albums from 2001. But first, we have to get to the list. And with that, I turn it over to John Young for his number five.
Thank you, Ted. My number five record came out in December of 2001. It's the latest album on my list from that year. And it's No Doubt's Rock Steady, one of my favorite albums from the year. The rock, the reggae, the mixing of styles and textures that Gwen Stefani and the band does on Rocksteady. It's just one of my favorite examples of branching out. You know, they've been around since 96. I believe mm-hmm. this is their second record, and I could be wrong.
That's their third. That one's their third
album. Okay, yeah, thank you. That's why we have Ted in the house, people. Fact check in real time. But this album had Hella Good is probably one song people remember, which still has that combination of driving rock and synthesizer laser beams shooting off in the song. Underneath It All, of course, is another hit from that record. Mm-hmm. But some songs that didn't get a lot of airplay necessarily, but still rock in a way that you go, that's No Doubt. Damn right, they can play guitars in that band. Platinum Blonde Life is one example from that album, which is a rock and roll song. And you think Gwen Stefani, who I guess needs no introduction. She's an amazing artist and has done some amazing solo work and whatnot. This shows the diversity of the band, No Doubt, in my mind, in a real kind of profound way. Song after song after song on the record are different. They're amazing. They experiment a little bit and usually wind up hitting the nail on the head, which is why it makes my number five.
Yeah, they had the sophomore slump with the album previous that had like Ex-Girlfriend and Simple Kind of Life and things like that. And I thought, wow, that happens with a lot of bands. You know, they come out of the gate really strong with that first album. And it's like, oh, these guys are great. Second one comes out. It's like, oh, these guys are not so great. But then they redeem themselves with Rocksteady. I thought that it was also a very, very good album. It did not make my number five, but I agree with you in that it is a solid piece of work. And my number five is kind of out there. I really kind of glommed onto this band called the Yeah Yeah Yeahs back then in 2001. They only had an EP out, 13 minutes worth of music, but it's kind of a throwback album in a way because the front woman, Karen O, she has this kind of punk attitude from the 70s. Her voice alternates between this kind of wobbly delivery and it's punctuated with occasional squeaks that rise above this sort of
who big, doesn't like you a few, know, you know, squeaks in your record. Come on, man.
Yeah. Dale Bozzio.
Yeah. Thank you.
She squeaks.
Missing persons alert.
Right, exactly. Right. Their sound is really big. It's only a trio and really only two people play music. There's a guy named Nick Zinner on guitars. And then there's a guy named Brian Chase on drums. But sometimes it's very melodic, but other times it's just noise. In 2001, I thought, well, you know what? Every now and then, every decade or so, there seems to be a band that comes out and it's just all stripped down and it's all this kind of this punky vibe or this just this loud noise. And the reason why bands like the Yeah Yeah Yeahs come out maybe every 10 years or so is because the record industry or the music industry has to go through some sort of palate cleansing. The Yeah Yeah Yeahs were right at that point in 2001 where I think that they thought, you know what? The music has gotten a little too polished, a little too sterile. We need to get back to this sort of ferocious kind of feel to it. The White Stripes did, they had an album that came out the same year. So they were kind of like that as well. The Yeah Yeah Yeahs didn't have that kind of pop sensibility yet. The next album, their actual full album later did. But this one, it does have that sort of punk vibe that I really like glommed onto because I thought, wow, this sounds like the 70s punk kind of stuff. It's great. So there's my number five.
Yeah. You do like a lot of weird shit, which is
one of the reasons I like you.
You know who else is a fan of the Yeah Yeah Yeahs is Elton John, believe it or not. Came out with I think it was when their debut album, the full album came out. Mm-hmm. He was one of the first people to kind of promote them. There was an unlikely promotion, you know what I mean?
From
an established artist who also, by the way, to give Elton John his credit, has taken chances. His career chances too. And maybe that's what he appreciated about that band. Mm-hmm. But well done, Ted. You're going to make me take a left turn into some album I haven't given a lot of thought to. And by the end of this thing, of course, remember when Ted puts together his Spotify list, you, dear inhabitant, will have a chance to hear some of these songs. If you haven't had a chance to really delve into them, Ted will give you that chance on Spotify.
Yes, yes. I'm a Ted Asrogadu, by the way. So we go to number four now with your number four.
Yes. Well, is my body too bootylicious for you, babe? It should be, because my number four pick came out in April of 2001, around the month I turned 36 years old. It's Survivor from Destiny's Child. And I will tell you why, because I'm glad you asked. This album has some of the rock Two, that maybe you wouldn't expect me to be, as a rock guitarist, to be, you know, jumping towards this particular album. But the title track, Survivor, which you've heard on the radio a lot, is a great, fine, crafted pop song with Beyonce and the team there, you know, providing that three-part vocal delivery that they do so well. It was a Michael Jackson tribute TV show that came out in 2001 when Destiny's Child was just kind of a relatively new act. And they did a live version of Bootylicious, which with real guitars, they had three guitar players and drummer and horn section. And of course, the beginning of that song has that Stevie Nicks Edge of 17 guitar part that they lifted, but they played it so raw live. And I remember watching Beyonce looking at Michael Jackson and like taunting him with, your body too bootylicious for your bang. And he's looking right at him and he's kind of taken aback. Beyonce. But it was powerful. And all I can say is I didn't have the album until I saw that particular cut of that special with Destiny's Child doing Bootylicious. And I thought, this song pretty rock. It's a rockin' song. Yes, it's a dance song. Yes, it's Bootylicious, whatever you want to say. But there's a rock sensibility to it that made me love the band. And of course, gone on to become a huge Beyonce fan. She's just an amazing artist in totality. But this shows her some of her rockin' best. And if you followed her career at all, you've seen like when she's done live shows, Vegas residencies, whatever, she has a full band, full guitars, full everything. And generally, they're mostly female. She hires female musicians to back her up on tour. So there's just too much not to like about this record, Survivor from Destiny's Child, my number four.
Well, it was certainly top of the pops, as they say, maybe in jolly old England. I agree. I think that when they covered, well, the song Bootylicious, when they had the Edge of 17 guitar as a kind of a loop underneath it, it's a nice way to hook the listener in with something very familiar, and then suddenly something maybe not so familiar takes place underneath that, or on top of it, I should say.
Sure.
It's a good pick. Yeah. Absolutely love Destiny's Child. There was another trio that I really, really liked called TLC. And I think that they're fantastic. Their last full album with the original lineup, Fan Mail, is one of my favorites. But then this other trio comes out and they've got just as, I guess, diverse sensibilities in terms of music. It's not just another soul trio,
right?
But rather it's one that tries to pull from different sources. And I'm sure they worked with producers who helped shape their sound in a way.
These are young people too. They're 20, when this record is released. Yeah. So just, to me, that's also phenomenal to have that sensibility. Even if you are working with producers to help you get it together, they still deliver the final product. And vocally, I don't know, Destiny's Child, one of my favorite vocal groups, if you will, from that period of time.
So I'm going to go with a band that released an album fairly recently. Number four is the band Tool, and the album is Lateralis. I hope I'm saying that right. Now, Tool is a hybrid of Rush and Black Sabbath. Now, this is according to a critic at Pitchfork, and after I read that, I thought, yeah, that's about right. This is kind of a prog metal thing, very melodic, with more than a sprig of paranoia sprinkled in the lyrics.
I need a little sprig of paranoia to get me going.
Tonight's dish is lamb with a sprig of paranoia.
in a fine mint sauce. Yes,
exactly. Tool's music kind of fits right into 2001. I was a big fan of the show The X-Files, still am. And The X-Files was just about to wrap up the series the next year. And this, to me, this record kind of fits in with that whole trust no one crowd. Of course, the standout track is Schism. Most people won't recognize from the title, but maybe I'll just lace it in really quick.
Yeah, I mean, you hear it on rock radio. When you hear that bass part you're talking about, you're like, oh, there's Tool.
Right. So when you hear this, you know it's the song Schism. Perfect. So that's my number four. Tool is an interesting band in that, like, they take forever to release albums. They're not on the two-year album cycle. They're more like on the decades-long album cycle. The drummer, if I may highlight the drummer, Danny Carey, for a moment, he is so good. He's like one of the best prog metal drummers out there. He's very melodic. I know that we talk about Rush, and because of my Rush obsession, and Neil Peart's supposed to be the god, but God, Danny Carey is really, really just good. He's so different in terms of his style. And he's kind of the one that shapes the music for Tool. Not necessarily all the parts, but helps, sort of guide the musicality And then the vocalist, Maynard Keenan, he's, a lot of people look at him and think that this guy is so weird.
But you're in a rock band and your name's Maynard?
Maynard, yeah, I know. His lyrics are often very paranoid. And again, with this album, I think it really does fit in with what's going on with the culture in 2001. There's my number four.
Excellent. I would reiterate that the drums in the band Tool are what attracted me to them. I don't know their catalog well, but when I hear that offbeat and different time signatures in a rock song, like Dream Theater or like some of the Rush stuff we talked about,
That
takes it to another level. And you're right. It seems like the songs are built on that drumming, which is extraordinary. And you hear it in almost every Tool song I ever hear. It's like, God, that drummer's good. An inspired pick, my friend.
Thank you. Let's go to your number three.
Number three is going to be a bit of a transition from the band Tool to Jennifer Lopez. How do we do that? That's what Planet LP is all about. It's very thin up here as far as the oxygen levels go. So things get a little crazy. J-Lo, which is Jennifer Lopez's record that came out, I think it was January when the album was released. And this is just another record like Survivor from Destiny's Child. I could not get away from the groove of the song Play, where, you know, DJ going to play my song. The hit from that record, I think, was Love Don't Cost a Thing, which is a more mellow. It's still a beautiful song. And I think Jennifer Lopez, like a lot of those singer, songwriter, dancer, performer, she just sort of is a triple threat. She does it all. She writes her own music. She performs beautifully. She's inclusive. There's a million reasons to like her. She's beautiful. Her vocals are amazing. But Play is one of those songs I could not get out of my head in 2001. And frankly, you know, I'm not clubbing and I'm not wearing a neon necklace and running out to the latest rave. But when I hear the song Play, I do all of a sudden, you know, break out into dance moves that a man of my age probably shouldn't do against doctor's orders, but I do it anyway because it moves me. This is one of those records high on my list for a top five because I thought there was groove, there was production on this record that I just thought was, it had a rocker like me going, what is that? Play was the song that sucked me in. Yes, there's a lot of great tracks on this album. I'm hoping that when Ted decides what songs to put in the playlist, that Play will be included. That's why J-Lo from Jennifer Lopez makes my number three spot.
Well, even though you say you're a rocker, you're more than just a rocker. You're not even just a mocker, as
don't mock me, Asfogato.
Really? No, but I think that you love a lot of soul music. You're a lot of soul artists.
Everybody
has diverse musical tastes, I would hope so, that they just don't like just this one thing because it makes life kind of boring if you just sort of like stick to the one thing. Like, I'll only listen to Tool. That's all I listen to.
Right. And we find those people to be generally annoying. That's right. Because you can't hang out with them unless there's Tool music somewhere nearby. And I think you would agree, if you want to let your mind go and you just want to dance some of your troubles away, sometimes those songs are perfect for the occasion, whatever it is. And I think this record has got a lot of those songs on it. It's not necessarily escapist. I think the production values are great. I think the writing's great. And Play just hits me, especially if you visualize Jennifer Lopez singing it to you, which, sorry, honey, I have done that occasionally. She's singing just to me, okay? Yeah, whatever.
I don't think you're alone in that, my friend.
Hello.
My number three is Weezer's The Green Album.
There you go.
So this record, it's produced by Rick Ocasek from The Cars. It's a very compact album in that it only clocks in, I think, like at 38 minutes or something. But it's a real tour de force of power pop. The standout tracks are Hash Pipe, which, let's go back in history, folks. I saw John Young play this song in a bar in Rockland, California with his band.
Perfect for kind of a raunchy cover band I know I was working with at the time. Just playing some of these fun bars. Pot wasn't legal yet, but everybody was smoking it at the gig. And they're like, yeah, Hash Pipe. Everybody's pulling their pipes out.
I think it was 06 when I saw him there.
Yes, I think it was too. Our friendship was just budding at the time.
And I was like, wow, look at this guy in this bar in Rockland doing Hash Pipe.
What up?
I brought he's a friend of mine, but he was my producer, traffic producer, news producer at the time, a guy named Ramsey. And we were walking in. I'm all like, I don't know what we're going to get into here, but are you ready to get your butt kicked?
Oh, good times, Ted. We have a great history.
I know. You and your band were tight. And I was just like, and I turned to Ramsey. I'm all like, he's doing hash pipe in this bar. I can't believe it. And he,
do you think the rednecks will attack him?
That's what I thought. I thought, you know, I looked around. I was all like, oh, wow, this is a little, you know, maybe not my kind of place. But but it turned out to be fine. Everybody was super cool. And we had a really great time. The other standout track is Island in the Sun, which is a totally different song.
Sure.
Maybe it's not Ride or Die for Weezer, but SNL really got into the essence of how people get weird and geeky about their fandom for certain bands. Actress Leslie Jones really committed to being a Weezer fan in this skit. She really had no idea who the band was, but I wanted to play just a little bit from this SNL skit on Weezer.
All right. I'm going to have fun with this.
What's happening right now?
What's happening is that Weezer put out two perfect albums, Blue and Pinkerton, and the rest was pretty corny.
Well, that's your opinion, but me, I'm ride or die.
For Weezer?
They've been trash since 2001, son.
Well, if you think that, you're not gonna like what I'm about to say.
Well, then, please don't say it.
Pork and Beans is better than Buddy Holly.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're dumb. Oh, you're dumb. Martha, tell him he's dumb.
Is this a thing people care about?
No, it isn't.
Oh, wait. Let me guess. You only listened to the first two records.
Hey, man, I'll go all the way up to the Green album. Yeah?
Oh, you know what? You know what you sound like right now? Okay, hold on. Here's what you sound like. You sound like, oh, I'm stuck in 1994. High school's awesome. Why don't you grow the hell up? Listen to Ratitude. Listen to Pacific Daydream.
Pacific Daydream is not music, man.
No offense, but burn in hell.
I love that.
Making
the commitment.
She totally committed. She had no idea who Weezer was.
And she's one of my favorites too. I love Leslie Jones.
Oh, and that's Matt. Yeah. That's Matt Damon, who's the other Weezer fan. Yeah,
why don't you go to hell?
Burn in hell. Sure, it's all fun and games, but is Weezer any good? Absolutely they are.
Yeah.
You know, in a Gen X backward looking way, but to me that's what makes them an interesting band, because they pull from a lot of sources and they're not shy about their influences, you know. I mean, whether it's a guitar tone or a chorus or something.
Sure. And let's give them credit for doing a literal note for note cover of Toto's Africa that I almost like more than the original. I mean, it's so weird and so out of place. It's like when Faith No More did a cover of Lionel Richie's
Easy.
Crazy stuff. And I like when a band does that. I think it shows off their chops to some degree, but it shows that they're just going to keep surprising you and they're creative and that's cool.
So if Leslie Jones can go all the way to the Green album, I think I can too. So that's my number three.
Awesome.
So now we get to your number two. And we're knocking down this list pretty fast here.
Yeah, and we're about to rock it hard, Ted Asregato, with Silver Side Up from Nickelback. That is my number two record. It is a standout rock album that I know is generally known for How You Remind Me, which I think is maybe a big hit. People remember one of the first Nickelback hits. This song actually came out on September 11th. I've got two on my, don't give it away here, but I've got my final two actually came out on September 11th.
Huh.
You talked about that in the intro of how some of these songs may have shaped how we feel or whatnot about the year 2001. This record stands out to me because of the rock that didn't get played on the radio. Also another album that had come out 10 years earlier that we've talked about, Nirvana's Nevermind, which came out in 91. This song has a lot of Ode to Nirvana kind of vibe to it.
Really?
Which is weird because I know Nickelback sort of gets short shrifted a little bit. They were popular for a while, then it's almost more popular to hate them, or that, you know, Nickelback's kind of a cottage industry now. This record, I dare you to hate it. Go back and listen, if you haven't for a while, to Silver Side Up. They've got a track on there, a bunch of them that I love. One of them is Just Four, which has got that whole Nirvana start quiet, go hard rock, go quiet, go hard rock, sort of that Smells Like Teen Spirit sort of dynamic to it.
Mm-hmm.
That it almost feels like they were, you know, they studied under the Nirvana flag as well as ZZ Top and some of the other bands that Nickelback loved and is incorporated into their sound. They've got a song called Hangnail, which just says it all. The title of the song kind of makes you want to pull at your cuticles there. And it's that kind of a tune. Chad Kroeger's vocal on this, he's got that growl that he would kind of turn into his signature vibe, but he's much more snarly and nasty on this record compared to some of the stuff that you heard later on, the collaborations with Carlos Santana and the more mellow things they would do later in their career. I think this record is one of the hardest rocking records of 2001. If you want that guitar heavy rock that isn't going to make you think too deeply. It's just kind of well-written, hard party rock to some degree, with a snarl and a little nastiness underneath it. These Canadians will get it done for you. It's Silver Side Up from Nickelback making number two.
It did well for them, too. It went to number two on the U.S. Billboard 200, triple platinum. Actually, it was six times platinum here in the United States, three times platinum in the U.K., in their jolly old Canada. Is that right? No, not jolly old Canada.
You're Canadian. Come on.
Yeah, at least I was born there, but yeah, I guess I still technically am.
Yeah, I know.
I'm a U.S. citizen. Anyway, but in Canada, it went eight times platinum. So yeah, a great, I mean, it did really well for them. And I really only know that hit single, which how is you how remind you remind me. Yeah, so maybe I got to go back and check out the entire record, because I honestly didn't listen to much of Nickelback except for the hits, and that was it for right. me. So.
Well, and I'll tell you, a lot of people turned on them, maybe for good reason. I'm not sure. This record will make you rethink, why do you hate them? I think that's why it also makes my top five, because this is a rocking record. There's nothing pretentious or wrong with this album. It's good, hard rock. It's driving. The drums sound great. The guitar work is great. I challenge you to listen to it kind of in isolation and go, why do we hate this band again? I don't get it. That's okay. Kind of where it comes from.
Okay. I've got an open mind to it. I'll go back and listen to that album from Nickelback, which is their third and not quite a debut because it's their third record, but boy, what a third record, and it did really well for them worldwide. Speaking of worldwide, my number two is an artist who is kind of international in a way. It is Shakira's Laundry Service.
Nice.
It's easy to write off Shakira as a pop flash in the pan. I did at first, but then because of my daughter's obsession with Shakira, because of that obsession, I then fully committed to her music. And then in November 2002, and I marked that date because that's when I took my daughter to see Shakira. She was around six at the time. We went down to San Jose to the Compaq Center. Is that what it was called back then? And honestly, I just was expecting to think like, okay, I'm just going to sit there and just sort of the eye-rolling parent thinking, okay, my kid likes this stuff. And I thought it was one of the best shows I had seen in a long time. I came away like a huge fan. It had this big theme with a mongoose and a snake, and the band was tight. Shakira was absolutely mesmerizing on stage. She paid homage to classic rock. She did covers of AC/DC's Back in Black. She did Aerosmith's Dude Looks Like a Lady, Guns N' Roses' Welcome to the Jungle. But those were her classic rock roots. But there's a lot to love about this record. The hits like Whenever, Wherever get still played on radio, and you hear that and Underneath Your Clothes, they're fine. I really like songs like Objection Tango, Eyes Like Yours. They're just sublime. They're really well-crafted songs and layered in such a way with instrumentation that makes it incredibly interesting. And I credit the executive producer, Emilio Estevan. Yes, the husband of Gloria Estevan.
Nice.
For taking a woman whose English was iffy at the time and crafting a really accessible LP for North American, European, and Latin American audiences. So it really kind of had a worldwide appeal. Shakira's Laundry Service, great album.
I love it. And I play Whenever, Wherever fairly frequently on mm-hmm. my morning show and still love it. Now, I know that was maybe one of the bigger hits off the record.
Right.
But I've always been fascinated by her Colombian roots, about just the story you told there about making this album when English is not your first language and still being able to communicate it with Latin flair and still mm-hmm. really kind of suck us in with the instrumentation on that particular track, which I love. Yeah, I'm a big fan too. But now I got to go get Laundry Service and really get laundered.
It'll be an album that will surprise you, because you as the guitarist, you'll hear some really tasty hooks throughout the whole thing. And it's just a really well-produced album. Again, you look at who was the executive producer
sure.
of this. You know, yeah. you have, if Emilio Estefan says, I like you.
Yeah. I think I'm going to, you're in good shape.
Right. I think I'm going to make you a star, you know, crossover appeal. She was already a big star. She had a lot of Spanish language records, a number of which were very good too. And I have a couple of those. I don't understand what they're saying, but I like the music.
Right. So, sometimes you just feel it.
You do. Right. You do. And are you feeling your number one?
Oh man, I'll tell you what, Ted, I am. This album, which also dropped on 9/11 of 2001, is The Blueprint by Jay-Z. This album, I think it almost needs to make a top five from 2001 because of the cultural impact that this record had, the beginning of the rise of Jay-Z as a not just a hip-hop artist and producer and discoverer of talent, but really helping to change a lot of the dynamic about storytelling and about discovering what's behind an artist's inclination to make a particular record. This mm-hmm. Blueprint album, you know, and I could go, we could talk a lot about its origins. And, you know, Jay-Z was in a lot of legal trouble, facing some prison time, I think, when this record came out. He literally is sort of spilling his guts. He's sort of confessing to things on this album. Mm-hmm. He's describing his childhood in the song, the one that really gets me. There's a lot of them that get me. The song Blueprint, Mama Loves Me, which is an autobiographical song where he talks about like coming up in the projects and which different relatives looked after him, which ones abandoned him. But it's all done to this groove that's unmistakably groovy. Is that redundant? It is. But the song continues to move you even as you're listening to the story being told. There's a collaboration he does with Eminem on this record called Renegade, which has production value. And you realize, God, these records are now getting produced to a level that isn't just like it sounds like a Casio keyboard in the background with like great vocals and great beats and great raps. Now the music behind it is starting to be featured. And a track that really sticks out for me when it comes, you were talking about groove and guitars mm-hmm. and how I love that kind of thing. Horns too, is the song Heart of the City Ain't No Love, which has got a guitar phrase and a horn phrase behind it that supports the amazing lyric that Jay-Z is delivering. And as a fan of rock music, I feel like you can still love this album as a rocker and still appreciate where it fits in the firmament of creative artistic pieces of work that came out in the last 20 years. It almost belongs on a list because it's important on so many levels besides being a great musical record. And that's why it makes my number one.
I think it's a sublime pick, my friend. Very
thank you,
good.
Man.
I was teaching actually back then in 2001, and I was talking to my class and I dropped a Jay-Z reference, and everyone kind of looked at me like, why is this old guy who's teaching me political science?
He's all old of 36, but
right. You know, to an 18-year-old, 36 sure. is pretty darn old. Right? This guy with hair loss and you know, a little bit of a belly now, you know, he looks like a dad. But I said something about, and I was a dad. I can't remember what the reference I said, but I dropped a Jay-Z reference, and we took a break, and three people came up to me and they're all like, hey, professor, so you really know who Jay-Z is? And I'm like, yeah, come on. You can't really get away from the guy at this point, right?
Right, because right.
We didn't think like you even listen to like current music. I'm not that old, guys.
I guess, I'm a music fan, guys. Come on.
But when you're teaching political science, you don't trot out your music cred.
Sure. No, that's true. You find the right moment to do that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
And this record had some musical cred in with production. I believe that Kanye West was a producer or had something to do with the design and creation of some of the tracks on this record too. Now, no matter what you think of him as a human being, and you and I have talked about some of displeasure and some of, you know, some of the stuff he's done personally, but I don't think you can argue, especially back then, that Kanye had a positive influence on directing mm-hmm. how some of these songs were produced and ultimately put onto the record, the Blueprint. So a little more credibility there too.
You look at Kanye, the band now, and even though he changed his name legally to Ye.
Yeah.
So yay for yay now,
I guess.
But yes, he was absolutely essential in helping shaping that record. And again, inspired choice and sublime. Definitely needs to be at a number one position. Unfortunately, it's not my number one. Mine goes in a very, very different direction. It is Michelle Branch's The Spirit Room.
Nice.
I was expecting some you know, pushback from the peanut gallery, but I guess not.
None. Are you kidding me? Michelle Branch, I know. I will obviously let you take this and ride with, but I'm a fan. She's an eclectic, goofy, super creative, currently married to the drummer of the Black Keys and living in Tennessee. Bring on Michelle Branch.
Now, my brother Steve wondered back in 2001, when I was really getting into this record, he says, are you in love with Michelle Branch? And I said, not as an impossible crush, because that would be weird. She's like 18 years old. But I was in love with the fact that here was a singer-songwriter who played guitar and sang in a key that wouldn't have gotten her vaulted to the top of American Idol or any of those singing competition shows. So she's originally from Sedona, Arizona. And Branch was given a lot of freedom to pursue her musical career from her parents at the age of 16. She like hit the road with these guys that were in their 20s, maybe some pushing 30. And she came out to San Francisco to play her music on the Haight-Ashbury and so in hopes that like a club would recognize her and just try to stand out in some way. You know, like how many parents would let a 16-year-old girl go out and do this with a bunch of 20-somethings, and she
I'm
was
not
like,
letting my daughter do that. Sorry, sweetheart.
So she did release a record before getting signed to Maverick Records. And Maverick Records is headed up by somebody you may not have heard of her. Her name is Madonna. I don't know if you know who she is. Yeah.
Okay. Express yourself.
But what I love about the Spirit Room is the heartfelt songs about love, loss, and longing. The standout track is the last track on the record, and it's called Drop in the Ocean. And the reason why I like it is because while I do like the hits, and that's what got me hooked into the record, it's this last song that is so different from every other song because there's sort of this electronic percussion that gets put underneath her and really starts to drive the beat, because it starts out as a sort of teary-eyed ballad, but then it really starts to pick up. And I'm all like, wow, this is really kind of interesting. And sometimes the last track of an album tends to signal where an artist is going to go on their next record. And I thought, ooh, this might be kind of cool if she's going to go in this direction. Like, she's got the guitar bass stuff and on the Spirit Room, but maybe she's going to try some electronica stuff in the next record. Well, that didn't happen, but I still love Drop in the Ocean. I saw Michelle Branch, I guess it would have been the 20th anniversary of the Spirit Room. She was on YouTube doing every song just with her and her guitar. She didn't have any other band with her. And then when she did Drop in the Ocean, so she did it in order. So she did Drop in the Ocean. She says, well, I can't recreate it like we did it in the studio, so I'm going to do it how I did it as a demo. So, and it was very, very different song. It was very slow and not to my liking because I'm so used to the recorded version, but it was still interesting to watch her do these songs 20 years later and still knock it out of the park. I mean, she didn't have any problems hitting the same notes that she was hitting back when she was 18 years old, and now she's 20 years older. So there it is, my number one.
You make a lot of great points about Michelle Branch, the ability to play guitar and sing. She can just be like a coffee house solo artist and still get her point across. But that whole point about her not being like Kelly Clarkson or one of these people with like a 7-octave range and still completely selling you on not just the singer-songwriter thing. She could rock. When she did Game of Love with Carlos Santana.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's, you still know how to get up there and make that thing happen as a rock artist, like Heart or any of those other bands that had that female rock energy that you and I both love. That's an inspired choice. I've been a Michelle Branch fan forever and recently saw Axis TV. They have that where Dan Rather, I guess it's called The Big Interview.
Oh, yeah.
And he did an interview with Michelle Branch and Patrick, whose last name escapes me. Patrick Dempsey, is that who he is? The drummer for the Black Keys. They're now a couple and they live in Nashville. And Michelle Branch was just talking about her career kind of, yeah, exactly. I started off in Arizona. I went to San Francisco. I tried to get little traction there. I got married young. That didn't work out. She was kind of wise beyond her years and still incredibly in tune to songwriting. Now they have a family. I know she has a child, previous child with the other dude. Now she and Pat have got a kid together. It was a neat insight into kind of how almost normal she is given for what she's been through and how young she started at it. It was pretty fascinating. If you get a chance, check out the Big Interview with Dan Rather and Michelle Branch. It'll give you a little insight into why it's Ted's number one pick.
Her current husband is Patrick Carney from the
Carney. Okay. As in Carnival Carneys. I got you.
Yes. Yes. You
know, Patrick, and isn't he the guy from
he's an actor, right?
He's an actor, right? Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was interesting with Michelle Branch is after her second album, which was called Hotel Paper, she kind of stopped with the pop stuff. She went into country and she had one album with a woman that I did interview years ago. Her name's Jessica Harp. They were called The Wreckers and they only had one album and then they did a live album, but then they dissolved the whole thing. When I talked to Jessica about The Wreckers, she said that we really had a lot of fun doing that album. But when we went out and took the show on the road, we found that most of the songs were really sad. And most people that were in the audience, they wanted to dance. And we had one song that had medium tempo, if you will. She was kind of looking out in the audience thinking like, you know, I think that we need to take this in a different direction. So they took a break and I think they were going to try to regroup and do a second album, but it never happened. But then Jessica put out a pretty good album called A Woman Needs. So, and I'm not a huge country fan, but when I was interviewing her, I told her that I liked a lot of the songs, especially the title track. And I think there's another one called Love Letter. And she says, you know, a good song is a good song. And it doesn't matter whether it's country, whether it's hip hop, whether it's rock, whether it's symphonic. It's just a good song is a good song. And I said, you're right. You're right. And that kind of, you know, melted the prejudices I have for country music away a little bit. And I was like, yeah, just kind of open yourself up to these things.
Absolutely. And this is why you learn something on the Planet LP podcast. I've just learned to love Michelle Branch more than I already did.
We've come to the end, but let's do a quick recap for our listeners. Start with your top five and or your number five and recount them to number one, John.
Let's start with number five was Rock Steady from No Doubt that came out in December of 2001. My number four was Survivor from Destiny's Child from April of 2001. My number three, J-Lo from Jennifer Lopez, released in January of 2001. My number two pick was Silver Side Up from Nickelback, which came out on 9/11. And number one, my number one anyway, The Blueprint by Jay-Z, which dropped on September 11th, 2001.
My number five is the debut EP by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. My number four is Tool, Lateralis. Number three, Weezer, The Green Album. Number two, Shakira, Laundry Service. And number one, Michelle Branch, The Spirit Room. And that is it. This is our 32nd episode. So we've been doing this trek for 32 episodes, plus a couple of social media only posts. Wow, John, look at us. Woo!
Come on, man.
We're doing all right. So our passion for music hasn't waned as we ventured down the road, this thing we're calling Planet LP. John, thank you so much for taking this journey with me. You've been a great partner through this trek. And it didn't start out as Planet LP. We started as Rooks and Beckards, and it was a very different podcast back then. But now I think we found our own groove that we hope that people are grooving to as well.
As Regatto, I like where you've taken this ship, and I'd fly anywhere with you, brother.
All right. And we'll do this again very soon. I want to thank you all for coming along with us as we drop the needle on a world of albums. So long for now.